2017 Crashers Chat Show number 2. We did this last year and had a total blast, and so we're going to do it again, and we're going to have an even better time this year. So first up, we're going to go ladies first. Linda Armin, she is Senior Vice President, Corporate Affairs at Bethpage Federal Credit Union. Thank you for being here, Linda.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Our pleasure. And second in line is Victor roll those R's. All right. He is Vice President of Member Service Education and Engagement at the World Council of Credit Unions. Get to know this guy. He is a very international. I mean, if we had credit unions on the moon and Mars, he'd be there. He would be there talking it up.
The next meeting's in Vienna, right?
That's right.
Thanks for the plug.
The big show in Vienna this summer, so sign up for that if you can do that as well. And next in line is Mr. Doug Leeton. He is National Sales Manager for Visa. Welcome, Doug.
Hello. How you doing?
And last but not least, Mr. Dean Young, Senior Vice President of PSCU. Welcome, Dean. All right, let's dive into the questions. Last year we did a format where I asked one person and we just kind of focused on that one person. This year we're going to kind of mix it up a little bit, and I'll start with somebody at random. We'll just draw a name out of the hat. But the first topic we're going to talk about is technology, and this really affects us all. I mean, we all have one of these, and we're doing our banking on these things, and we're doing everything on these things. So we're going to start with technology. And I had a personal experience recently at a credit union conference last week at the ECUC conference, Educational Credit Union Council. Really cool little conference. It's all based on education-focused credit unions. But anyway, one of the speakers there was Gary Perez. He's the CEO of USC Credit Union. He's a very forward-thinking guy. If you guys know him, he's a really cool guy. If you ever get a chance to go see him speak, go see him. He's really cool. But during his presentation, he brought up, he asked people in the audience if anybody had read Brett King's books. Do you guys know who Brett King is? Anybody heard of Brett King? Andy has. Well, anyway, Brett King is a very, he's kind of a financial guru. He is actually one of the founders of Moovin.com, Moovin Bank. It's kind of a virtual bank like Simple and SoFi and all those type of things. But anyway, he has written a number of books. He also has a Breaking Banks, a podcast, that type of stuff. But he's a real kind of forward-thinking guy. He's talking technology, all this stuff. But he's written a couple of books called Banking 2.0 and Banking 3.0. It's kind of futuristic thinking of where financial services are going. And so these are great books, by the way. If you ever get a chance to get them on Amazon, Kindle, whatever you got to do. Read them. They're really, really good stuff. But he asked the audience if anybody had read Brett King's Banking 2.0 or Banking 3.0 or any of his books. And I was standing in the back, and we're in a room full of like 200, 300 people, and nobody raised their hand. And this is a room full of CEOs, directors, volunteers, executives, and nobody raised their hand, and it blew me away. It's like, oh my gosh, technology is such a theme that runs through our lives. So it just got me thinking, it's like, has this lack of participation, is this the mindset of credit unions today? I mean, very few leaders are looking into researching our financial technology. So, I mean, I'm going to leave it to the panel here. Who wants to, Dean, do you want to go first on this one? Since
sure.
You guys are semi-technology, they're at PSCU.
Absolutely. So I'm interesting.
What's your take on that?
So my take is, number one, I'm not sure it's statistically relevant, although it was a room of educator credit unions.
It was a small sampling.
Ironic. But the CEOs, leaders of credit unions we speak with all the time, understand pace of change is mind-blowing. And especially the technologists are really looking to leverage partners in many cases. So some credit unions have the ability to build internal resources, to build new technology. Others tend to partner a bunch, and for me it's really about the friction at the end of the day. How do you take friction out of the experience? And you mentioned SoFi.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give you some idea of SoFi, I don't know how many of you have heard about it. If it was a credit union, it'd be top 100. Before long, probably top 50. So it's significant. And we believe the reason why it's growing leaps and bounds is, the experience is very good. It's easy to utilize the technology and get what you need. So you know, it's kind of our take on the whole thing.
Okay, cool. Linda, yeah. I mean, Linda, I want to get your take on it because you've got the credit union perspective. What's your take on that?
So technology is really important to be focusing on, and I think my peers are focusing on it. I think one of the things that becomes overwhelming with technology is, number one, how much it costs just to keep up, mm-hmm. and number two, how many resources it takes to actually keep it going. Mm-hmm. We just made a major multi-million dollar investment in upgrading our technology, and once we get upgraded, we'll be caught up. So if you could think about that perspective, we just put like all this money in and a lot of resources, and we'll just be caught up. So it's an ever, you know, you have to be on it all the time. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a lot of credit unions, the bulk of the credit unions, might not have the money or the resources sure. to necessarily do this. So they do partner up and look for different shared services solutions and things along those lines to be able to do that. And, you know, it's critical, but we have to, because you can't pretend SoFi and Lending Club and all those places aren't there. You have to be top of mind, and then you have to pick and choose your battles and say, you know, what needs to be upgraded first, right? Is it the website? Is it the mobile? Do we want to be omnichannel? You know, optimization, and then you got all the things that you have to figure out. So I think you got to pick and choose your battles and put your resources where you can be most effective and most timely, because if you wait too much longer, then you're going to be behind mm-hmm. and not maybe be able to catch up. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting point.
That segues to my next question, which is still technology related, and I'll go with go to you, Doug. You hit the nail on the head, Linda, because it's technology is moving at such a rapid pace these days, and it's getting faster and faster, and it ain't ever going to slow down. How does a credit union keep up? How do they keep pace? I mean, especially the smaller ones that don't have the resources like the bigger ones do. How do they keep pace?
Well, I think it really does come down to partnerships and picking partners that can help you stay up with that rapidly accelerating mm-hmm. pace of change. So whether it's PSCU or Visa or a combination of both, you're looking for organizations that do have the scale that can deliver cutting edge technologies to allow you to stay up. But it's really, you know, it's really important to be able to identify those right partners and know that those partners are also in it with you and not potentially competing against you.
Victor, I want to get the global perspective from your.
Yeah, in the world, technology is one of the five challenges that credit unions face, and no matter where you are, whether it's in Tulsa, Oklahoma, or in Kathmandu, it's just the same thing. The customer of today wants frictionless experiences. They just want everything to work right here, right now. We don't have the patience to wait for anything, and this is true to anywhere that you go. And so for the credit union is where what is our priority? It becomes overwhelming. You have priorities when it comes to advocacy, to technology, to, you know, attracting the young crowd to your credit union. So, but you have to have a person within the credit union that's a driver and a thinker, and, you know, that really keeps up with the pace of this. What I've seen, Koreans in the world that are very successful at this, they have one or two point persons that always are looking at trends out there and look for the frictionless experience for the customer or the member. Mm-hmm. So what are the pain points that you need to eliminate in this so the transaction is fast, is easy, and is convenient? Koreans in other parts of the world are known, you know, we know for protocol, for paperwork, for a lot of things that you need to comply with in order to procure a service. Now they're really thinking, well, this is inconvenient. Mm-hmm. And as much as we love the philosophy and the, you know, the commitment to community and all of that, if in that moment that the person is doing a transaction, if it's not convenient for them, they forget about that. Because convenience trumps everything else.
No doubt.
You know, one thing to add to that too is, you know, we talk a lot about partners and you know, there's been a lot of talk about disruptors out there that might be taking business away from credit unions. And I think we're increasingly seeing that those disruptors are also partnering with your institutions, and you're bringing that new thinking and that new technology and embracing that disruption to make a better member experience. But one thing I have to think about, it's a little bit different spin. It's not necessarily the bits and bytes of technology, but it's around making sure that there's a lot more folks like yourselves working at credit unions and bringing in those innovative ideas. And whether it's your coding or not, you have a great sense for what is attractive to all of your peers to be members at the credit union, whether they're working there like yourselves or they're just banking at the credit union. So there's another aspect of this too, which is it's really important to have, you know, many, many more rooms full of people just like yourselves bringing those ideas in, and whether they're partnering or developing it in-house, creating those services, creating those products, creating those new technologies that make the credit union space just that much more attractive to this, you know, younger generation.
Indeed, indeed. Hey, we're going to switch gears here a little bit. We're going to talk about unserved markets, and I'm coming right at you, Linda, all right?
Okay.
So we all hear about credit unions here and there stepping up and doing these wonderful things in their communities, and they're fantastic, and they're really infectious in a good way. They want you to, it makes you want to do good in this world. But these stories, they seem to be few and far between, except there's one website, See You Social Good. If you go there, enough of that. If you go there, you'll see all these great, great stories. But that said, where are credit unions today in serving unserved markets? I want to get the credit union perspective, Linda.
I think you're right. I think it's hit or miss. Mm-hmm. And I think it's where does the credit union, again, have resources to be able to do certain things? Because it costs money. You have to balance everything, right? And it costs money to be able to serve an underserved market the right way. And so you have to have that balance of being able to utilize the whole breadth of the cooperative, right? So there's mm-hmm. some, that's why we don't have personal banking, and most credit unions are even keeled, but we're cooperative. So if you come in with $5 or you come in with $5 million, you get the same rate, right? Mm-hmm. And that's because it all balances each other out, and you need to be able to do that. Yep. Now, my credit union, we've been very focused on making sure that if we build, you know, two or three middle market branches, there's always going to be an underserved branch to go with it. So we have 35 branches, and we have about 12 branches serving underserved markets. And so it's important, because you just have to strike that balance. Now, what I would say is, again, you have to pick and choose how you're going to do this and where you're going to spend your resources. You have to discover what is it that those underserved markets need, and don't be presumptuous, and don't just say, oh, well, it's a low-income neighborhood, so they must need this, right? For the most part, they need checking and savings accounts just like everybody else, right? So again, how do you make it simple? How do you make it frictionless? How do you make it easy? You also don't want to have in your mindset that low income means bad credit, because it doesn't always mean bad credit, right? And I always say underserved doesn't mean bad. It just means low income. So we need to just make sure that we don't have a preset mindset to what underserved actually is, because it just means it's lower income and doesn't have as much access. So give them the access and make sure that you have the right products and services available to help them. And it all comes from the philosophy of your credit union. So our vision of our credit union is to enrich the lives of our employees, our members, and the communities we serve. It's a very simple vision. That's our goal. And everything that we do, it keeps that in mind. Are we enriching someone's life today? So whether it's an underserved or a middle market, we have to make sure we're doing that, and we do that in a couple of ways. We help the not-for-profit world in our communities to make sure that they're helping lift up the underserved. We're making sure that we have the right banking products in our underserved communities. And then we're leveraging the things that we do in our middle markets to also help the underserved areas. And then it's all about engaging employees. Like, you know, we have volunteer opportunities for our employees. We do a very large VITA program on Long Island. A lot of people would say, oh, Long Island, it's a wealthy place. How would you have VITA? Well, we have done VITA for the last 15 years and put almost $18 million back into the Long Island community from VITA returns. We probably do 2,600 returns a year, and that's not a lot, folks. That's just us being able to manage our 12 underserved branches and making sure that we can keep up with that. There's some small credit unions in Manhattan that do tens of thousands, but that's all they do all day long, right? So it's, again, balancing your resources, figuring out how you can do it, but making sure that you have that mindset that this is important. We're a credit union, people helping people, that's what we do, and striking that right balance.
Victor, you look like you have something to say.
Yeah, I think it goes back to the origins of the credit union. Why did we start it? Well, we started to provide access to financial services to somebody that didn't have it.
Right.
And so you have to have that in mind all the time. But I think it's semantics as well. When you say low wealth, when you say poverty, when you say, you know, there's always all this negative connotation right there. And then that connotation kind of gives you hesitance. Mm-hmm. Say, why are we going to get into that when we have to build capital? We have to have reserves. We have to have all of these things in the credit union. So it's this push and pull. So you have to have within your credit union an advocate to say, you know, we have to make a difference in this community. We have to really offer services to those who are underserved. And, you know, you cannot serve everyone who's underserved. So pick and choose, you know, a niche. Who's closest to your branch? Who's closest to your credit union? And then, you know, you start developing that service culture. But you have to have written somewhere in the credit union that everybody sees it. We have to serve the underserved. Otherwise, everything else will overwhelm you, and then you would tend to forget that. And again, it goes to semantics, underserved, low wealth, low. It sounds like it's less,
right.
But it's not. But it's not. And what we found in different countries is there's this notion that the poor cannot save, but they can. And the credit unions actually have changed a lot of lives in Bolivia, in Ecuador, in Thailand, when they say, why don't you save 10 cents every day? At the end of the year, you will have, I don't know, $50, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money in those countries.
Yeah.
And it shows that the poor can save, and that a lot of our projects actually have focused on that. So anyway, it's just become forgetting about the semantics and then just be true to your mission. Why are we here? Well, we're here to serve somebody that doesn't have access to financial services. It's simple, but it's complex at the same time.
Exactly. So, what can credit unions do to kind of step up their efforts? I mean, you've talked to credit unions all over the country. What can they do to step up their efforts in this area?
So, there's tremendous opportunity. I saw an infographic. I think it was in the Times. I'm not sure who developed it. That there are 51 million people across the country who use alternate financial services. $1 trillion. In spend, which is amazing. You know, some of the work that Filene's been doing around that with the help of Visa.
Yeah, incubator.
And, you know, the National Credit Union Foundation around auto loans and things of that nature. There's lots of information in there how to get involved. I love the targeted approach. The reality is, you know, you can't be everything to everyone, but it is in the credit union DNA. So look for the opportunities. You know, you look at what Washington State Employees is doing with QCash and, you know, Connect being able, you know, around the payday loan opportunity. So you just look for those opportunities and you embrace them. And I think what I hear is when there's an owner at the credit union to go after something, it's very effective, and you know, they're seeing good progress.
Yeah, thanks. That's you know, we were talking about the incubator that we did with Filene. There's five programs that Filene is supporting in conjunction with what, Rob, about 60 credit unions today? 35. Okay. And that actually gets to my point.
60 sounds better. Let's go with 60.
but we should be at 60.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's something, and so what I would say on this topic is, I do think that we need to have larger credit unions with more scope and scale step up with many of these programs. I think what's happening in this market is that some of the larger ones are the credit unions today that are participating in the incubator are typically smaller entities that tend to serve that marketplace in the first place. So they're developing these more innovative programs to better connect with their communities. But we can't allow just the localized credit unions to just continue to carry that water. This has to be across the entire movement and needs credit unions of all size, particularly those that are larger, that have greater scale to step up to some of these programs. So if there's one thing I encourage all of you to do is to, you know, take a look at some of these programs, and as a takeaway from this conference, you know, take that back to your credit unions and evaluate whether you have these programs, what's the right program, you know, as you said, about making sure that it makes sense for the community, but, you know, lead the charge to bring these, to bring one of these into your credit unions and ultimately into your membership.
Excellent, excellent. I'm going to switch to everyone's favorite topic, regulations. Look at that, a hush fell over the room. Hey, let's leave politics, Democrat, Republican, whatever, off to the side here. But I want, one of the things that really startled me was when the new administration came in and they said, hey, let's freeze regulations. I know that's an extreme comment, but took me aback a little bit. I'm sure it took the industry, you know, the entire financial services industry aback a little bit, and I'm sure a lot of other people on the peripheral as well. But I want to get your guys' perspective on what your reaction was, since you're right smack dab in the credit union. Linda, I'm going to go right back at you. What was your reaction to that?
You know, it's funny. So my reaction was, okay, so we're taking a pause, right?
Yeah.
So, and when you actually looked at what the executive order did, is it took a pause for, to see what was currently pending, right? And if you looked at some of the NCUA proposals, it didn't really affect the things that were already hitting the registers and stuff like that. So in my opinion, it was, I think they were taking a pause. I'm trying to give all the benefits of the doubt, right? So that they can assess what do they want to change. So that's not a bad thing. You know, taking a pause is never a bad thing. What has to happen now is we just have to make sure that there's a thoughtful and deliberate discussion about what has to change. So when you're talking about the Choice Act, or you're talking about just repealing Dodd-Frank completely, or, you know, CFPB changes. So the problem is that politics exists, right? And you're going to have, so we can pretend it's not going to be political, but it is, and there's the different sides have their different opinions to it. And we, as educators, because that's what we are, we have to educate our lawmakers, have to know what the hot buttons are, right? So if you take taxation, for example, and they say, you know, oh, the taxation is off, is on the table, it's very possible it could happen. Okay, so what are the key points we want to get across to our legislators to make sure that we say, you know what, it's not just about taxing a credit union and the money that you would make taxing a credit union, but what if all these credit unions went out of business and you lost all these jobs, right? So now they're all about jobs, right? So they're going to say, oh no, wait a minute, we don't want to lose all these jobs, right? So you have to find the different hot buttons that speak to that congressman, and you need to know your politics. So if you know that there's a Democrat that's really all about CFPB, you might want to say, well, you know, I'm a small credit union, and, you know, just like the community banks, we want to differentiate ourselves from the large banks, and, you know, maybe you can wrap your arms around taking the $10 billion threshold for CFPB exams and move it to $50 billion. Can you maybe get your arms around something like that? And then they say, oh yeah, you know, that I can do. You know, but if you go in with repeal Durbin, they're going to look at you like you're crazy, right? So you have to just pick and choose and know your audience, and then focus on the regulations that mean something to you. I was in so many meetings this week, but somebody said, if you can't talk about how it speaks to your credit union, what's the actual effect on you, then don't bring it up. Because the first thing, and I do this on a pretty regular basis because government affairs is in my purview, but the first thing I tell a legislator, or when I do a call to action, I always say, this is what it means to Bethpage's members. So you need to know that. You need to know what that's going to mean to you in dollars and resources and people. And I think that, so you have to be educated yourself, and then you have to pick and choose how you're going to educate your lawmakers based on that. And then I'll just say one quick thing and move on to the rest of the panel. As you can tell, I'm a little passionate about this topic. But but I The other thing I think that you have to really think about is what can realistically be accomplished, right? And make sure that you're focused on that. Because we can be all pie in the sky, and my commercial lenders come to me all the time and say, when are you getting that MBL thing approved? And I just look at them like, okay. But we can keep chipping away at that, but don't let the air out of the balloon if we get just this piece of this thing. You know, find the battles that we can win, and let's just keep chipping away at them instead of always just focusing on the big pie in the sky stuff, and build those relationships with those legislators so that you are on speed dial when they have a question about mortgages, or you are on speed dial when they want to know, you know, is the three-person board for CFPB more important than a one-person to you? Is that important to you and your credit union? So build those relationships, like you said. Yeah. Be up there, stay in touch with everybody, and really focus on that stuff, because it's important. Without all of you up there and all of us continuing to do this, because they see the lobbyists every day, but they really want to see the people and talk about how it affects your 300,000 members in your district. You know, talk about that. It's so important.
Yeah, so we talk a lot about advocacy. You know, the pain credit unions are feeling with overregulation is number one. Everyone we talk to is number one. I really think it's about education right now. You think of all the jobs that have turned over in Washington, and the ones that will. We have to be real diligent, get some small wins, which is a great point. Get the small wins, educate, because frankly, it's important that the folks coming into those jobs understand what credit unions are all about, and as regulations do get repealed and things of that nature, we don't want to be collateral damage.
Right.
Frankly, we've already been collateral damage. When you think about when you're growing up, your sibling, right? Your brother or your sister did something wrong and you got punished for it, right?
And your parents actually had arbitrary rules that just threw out.
Absolutely, yeah, at the last minute, you know, and they'd always change.
Yeah.
But we'll stay away from the political end of it, but, you know, as much as you can do around education, you're always asked from congressional districts and things of that nature, you know, okay, great, so how does this impact my district? So you said know your numbers for your credit union, know your numbers for your district too, because it's very meaningful, very meaningful.
Yeah, we talked a lot about, you know, making sure that you're in touch with your senators, in touch with your congressmen and women. And like, you have to really educate them on, you know, everything that you were talking about, Linda. The House Banking Committee is like 50-ish people. Four have got financial services backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So there's 50 people that are in committees drafting rules and regulations, and less than a tenth of them really came out of your industry. So it's really important that you are providing that education, that you're, you know, you're giving that perspective, so we don't have situations where, you know, they're listening maybe just to one side, and before you know it, you've got regulation, which creates incredible unintended consequences.
Yeah. And you gotta get to know their staff, because everybody wants to meet with the representative, but it's the staff where the rubber meets the road, and that's whose speed dial you want to be on.
The policy analyst.
You really want to be with the policy analyst, because they're the ones that are in the weeds, and then they're the ones briefing their representatives, and it's just so critical. And you know, I'm gonna bring politics back into this for a second, but in a bipartisan way. The political environment is supercharged right now. So whether you're on the left or the right or somewhere in the middle, you're charged. You have an opinion. And it hasn't been like that in a really long time. So embrace it and take advantage of it, right? So at least people are charged up. At least people feel like they want to have a say, right, wrong, or indifferent, whether you agree with them or not. Take advantage of the fact that people are charged up about politics and use it to your advantage.
Indeed. Are you guys taking notes? Because I highly recommend you take notes on what these guys are saying right now. This is really important stuff, really good stuff. Victor, yeah.
Yeah, for us around the world, it's interesting because one of the five large challenges in the world is actually regulation. And in the United States, we see, and in more developed countries, we see that we have a tendency to be over-regulated. But go to Africa, go to South America, and then you see that there are countries that the financial industry, or credit unions specifically, are not regulated. So we're advocating there to get regulation. But we say, yeah, it has to be just. It has to be something that really recognizes the true spirit of a cooperative. Non-for-profit, members are the owners, and governed by volunteers. And the job of us in the advocacy side is to educate the policymakers, educate the Congress people, educate the president of many of these countries. So credit unions are regulated. It's so funny because we take delegations from the United States to other countries and tell them and go to elected officials and say, in the United States, this is how credit unions are regulated, and we want you to understand what is the true nature of this bank with a funny name. That's usually, that's usually how we refer to it, and we make a light joke about it. But at the end, that sparks some questions. Oh, what is a cooperative? And then you start telling the legislators, it helps the community, it builds things, it improves lives, and in the end, if your constituents know that you are a champion for them, they're more likely to vote for you. In the end, it's about the vote. But again, we have to say we have to strike a good balance in regulation. Not too much, not too little. It's kind of the Goldilocks of things. You have to be able to serve your people better and not let regulation be a burden.
One more quick thing. Follow the NCUA. When the NCUA puts out a proposal and wants comments, read that, understand it, educate yourself on it, and write the comment letter. Because the banks comment on our proposals that actually will affect you. It's not like it's pie in the sky and you're waiting for Congress to try and pass something. When the NCUA puts out something in the register, it's happening. So, and they listen. They read those letters, and they've made changes to significant, whether it was field of membership or supplemental capital, which is out right now, or some of the many different ones that have been out recently. They do read those comment letters and they do make changes. So educate yourself, and tell your credit union leaders, I want to write a comment letter. And there's a lot of resources. CUNA can help you. There's a lot of resources out there to figure out how to craft those letters, read the ones that are published. But that's super important because that affects you right away.
Yep. Let's switch gears here to a topic that we're all passionate about, the credit union difference. What makes us different? We go to all these conferences throughout the year, especially this one, and what we hear in the hallways is, hey, tell your unique story. Tell people the credit union difference. And we're going to hike the hill today, and we're going to go up there, and we're going to talk to our representatives about the credit union difference. But what is the credit union difference? What is your message here? And I want to ask each one of you guys, what does the credit union difference mean to you? What is it in your mind? And Doug, we'll go with you first.
Well, I think it's best summed up by a meeting I had a couple years ago with the Stanford Federal Credit Union, which is just down the way from us. We're in San Francisco. And I was asking the CFO there, a question I ask a lot of folks within the credit union space, which is around people that worked at banks, then working at a credit union, and how many of those people ever went back to a bank? So you ask, we know a lot of people have moved from banks to credit unions, particularly later in their careers, but how many moved the other way? And the answer is invariably none, zero. And we had this conversation about it, and he said, well, you know why that is, Doug? It's like, because we're the good guys. That was just it. We're the good guys. And it meant, that resonated. Yeah, say it, every day when I'm working with all of you, is that the credit unions are the good guys. It's our, one of the things that we're really passionate about, and we're working diligently with Filene and with other organizations, is to make sure that there are lots of people that discover the mission-driven purpose of credit unions early in their careers, so that it's not a bunch of ex-bankers at the end of their careers coming over and working within the credit union space, but it's, again, lots of folks just like yourselves that have discovered credit unions and the difference that they make in your members' lives early in your careers and allow you to kind of grow that career. So that's the way I think about it. You're the good guys.
Victor, you want to go next?
Yeah, in the 19 years that I've been in the industry, and I've seen, I keep a tally, and I've seen about 3,547 credit unions.
Is that all?
About around the world, I kid you not. But the one common denominator is that unselfish commitment to help somebody and improve somebody's life. And it may sound corny, but that's what you see everywhere. And in the end, if you ask anyone from a board member to the newest teller that was just hired, and once they get, you ask them, could you articulate why you work here? And it's that unselfish commitment to serve and to improve. And that's powerful. That's important. You're not there just for the paycheck. After a while, that becomes more and more true for anyone who works in this industry. So there's that's a relentless energy that we should just really use. Mm-hmm. And again, it's a beautiful thing to do and to work in. If you're that committed, and if you really want to improve things, come and work at a credit union. But again, there's a lot of untapped resources there. I think we're very humble in the way that we tell our story. We need to tell it more and tell it louder because we do wonderful things, but sometimes it seems like nobody knows or listens about
right.
it.
Right. So, Dean?
In a nutshell, you can't fake what credit unions have. We can talk about the vocabulary, so members versus customers. When you look at the cooperatives, the non-for-profits, the missions, you know, at the end of the day, they're there to serve their member. You're there to serve your member. When you look at your filter on how you do things, why you do things, why you're there, your mission, your DNA, at the end of the day, there's one thing that's driving your decision, and that's the member. It's not your profits, right?
It's not the family that owns the bank.
Exactly. At the end of the day, you all have to make money, right? You have to make money to stay in business, but that's not what's driving the mission of credit unions. But it would be nice to hear from a credit union, get their thoughts on the difference.
Linda.
So I'm 10 years a commercial banker and 15 years a credit unioner. And I won't go back.
You'll never go back.
And I'll never go back. And it's a quick funny story. When I first decided to take the job at the credit union, one of my co-workers at the bank said, well, let's make a list. He was all big about the lists, the pros and cons. Mm-hmm. And he said, Linda, if you go over to the credit union, you might not ever be able to come back. And I'm like, well, maybe I won't want to come back, you know? Actually had this conversation like I was going to this space that was going
to
suck me into a vortex and never let me
side.
Go to the dark side. Right? But, you know, for me, it's talking to the members. You know, we just had our 75th anniversary this year, and speaking to, we have a charter member club, and it's all members that have been with the credit union for more than 50 years. And, I mean, how many banks have a charter member club, right? And we have a big dinner for them coming up in May, and we get 300, 350 people that are going to come and dance and have dinner and just share their stories. But they'll tell you, oh, I took my kids on their first vacation because you had a vacation club loan, and oh, I did this, or oh, you helped me get my first house, and you know, a couple of years later, you helped me put a pool in. So that's what we're doing. We're putting people in their first house. And yeah, banks are doing that too, but in a more impersonal way, right? So the fact that they want to share that story, the fact that they have that identity with you, you know, I had asked this one member who'd been a member for a long time and didn't have his checking account with us, but he did everything else, you know? And I said, why don't you have your checking account? Because we're all worried about that PFI, right? So he's like, why don't you have your checking account with us? You have everything else with us. He goes, because I don't view my checking account as important. That's just how I pay those bills I don't really like. He's like, but everything that's really important to me is with you because I trust you. So, you know, it's a different perspective. And you, it sounds hokey, but we build relationships out of trust, and we keep them because we deliver on our promises. And, you know, sure, we're going to have some issues. And sometimes saying no to somebody is because it's in the best interest of them to say no, and it's how you explain it, because we can't always say yes. You know, credit unions can't be the one that says yes to everybody, right? But sometimes it's, okay, well, I have to say no to you, but I have a credit counselor here that's going to help you for free, and we're going to get you out of debt, and we're going to help you restructure, and then we're going to give you that loan, right? So it's the whole journey. It's the whole process. It's not just saying no, go figure it out on your own. And that, I think, is what makes credit unions different.
Trust is a big word.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about people's financial lives, and you know, you can mess around with a lot of things, but I'm not sure people's money is one of them. But, you know, trust is critical.
And the other thing you have, too, is collaboration. And again, an area that's distinct in financial services is your willingness to collaborate, whether it's with the credit union across the street or with another one across the country. And that's something that, you know, unlike most of my panelists here and all of you, you know, I do cross the lines between banks and credit unions, so our responsibility is banks. And over the course of my career, I've worked with some of the really largest banks. And you know, you don't ever see that spirit of collaboration. It is much more driven by what makes sense for that single entity, whereas within the credit union movement, it's much more about what's best for the entire credit union space.
I want to do a quick reality check here. Is this difference enough for today's consumers to ignore the disruptors? Is that, I mean, we tell these great stories, we have this passion, this difference, but we have all these disruptors out there. You know, again, the Simples, the Movins, the SoFis, that type of stuff. Is it enough to take the attention away from credit unions? And real briefly here, because we're running a little
bit. We have a head start, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at all the industries that are surveyed, credit unions rank, top 1, 2, 3. The head start is the relationship we've built with the membership, but you know, as channels reduce friction, there's some risk, without a doubt. But the affinity you've built with your members, if you're implementing that technology and you're working to reduce that friction, and you know, you're easier to do business with, it's a bonus. I love the head start.
Yeah, Victor, you wanted to.
Yeah, I think it is enough, but what we really need is a good storyteller. Mm-hmm. I think that's what we may be lacking. We're very humble as an industry, and I think that's what we were born that way. Just we are not here to tout and then just to say, oh my God, I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread, but we gotta do that at times when it's necessary. And I think we have the best differentiator, which is, you know, that passion and commitment and, you know, philosophy-driven industry. And we're here to make a difference, but we have to really know how to tell that story.
I think you owe Lady Gaga 10 cents.
Right.
Yeah. Victor, I think you owe Lady Gaga like 10 cents for saying born this way. So.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Hey, I digress.
I would just say the same thing, that, you know, you leverage what you have. And, you know, we get a lot of our new business from referrals. And refer a friend is a big thing in our credit union. We don't give a lot of money for it, but people have a sense of pride of referring their friends. And we get a ton of business from refer a friend. And I think that speaks to what we do and who we are. And you know what, there's gonna be disruptors all the time, and there's gonna be a new quick lending solution or this, that, and yeah, you're gonna lose some business to it. But if you do your job every day and you make people wanna come to you by making things simple and living out that philosophy, it's all gonna work out in the end. But you have to make you can't ride on the coattails of the credit union movement, you actually have to do the work. Right. And I think that's what's key.
Doug, you wanna wrap it up here?
No, I think everybody summed it up well. You're going to have to, the challenge you have is you've got to make sure that you're continuing to serve your existing clientele and also make yourself attractive to new members. And that can be tough. Then you're talking about, everyone says, well, the branches are going to go away and it's all going to go digital. Well, that's not going to be the case. Right? Branches are going to be there. They will continue to evolve. And there's a big chunk of your membership that really likes that aspect. And there's another big chunk of your membership that likes to connect with you digitally and expects, a chat response in seconds or minutes at the longest. And so those sorts of things are going to continue to be top of mind.
It's always going to be there.
Yep.
Always going to be there. All right, you guys are almost off the hot seat. We're going to open it up to Q&A from our esteemed audience. If you guys have any questions, and I hope you do, please stand up to the mic and Let us have it.
How you guys doing? Thank you for being here. I'm a branch manager, and like I talked with my lead yesterday, sometimes on my level, you hear a lot about regulations and things like that. Sometimes it's hard to articulate how it affects us on the front line, because we only see, hey, there's a new policy, whether it's MLA or opt-in or things like that. So I guess in a nutshell, how do you articulate to politicians how it directly affects you if sometimes all we see is the policy coming down the food chain, right? So thank you.
So did you see your transactions take longer once a new policy came into effect?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's what you say, right? My tellers used to take 3 minutes to process a transaction. Now it takes 5. The lines are getting longer, and it's inconveniencing your constituents, right? I just did a mortgage, and I had to fill out 100 more pieces of paper, right? It's simple things like that.
Next.
Hi, thanks for coming. Yeah, my question kind of goes back to technology and also regulations. Are there any regulations right now that are, you talked earlier about credit unions being a little bit behind the curve on technology. Do you think that's because of compliance regulations right now that we have in place? And if so, are there any regulations being proposed in the new credit union proposals that would allow us to advance in technology and get ahead of the curve on the technology side?
I think the having the technologies, it's something that the credit union itself needs to convince itself that they need to do. I don't think that the regulation would preclude them from adopting technology. Sometimes it's what's inside the credit union. Who's your board? Is your board technologically inclined, yes or no? Do you have a person that owns, the new technology that they need to have within the credit union? Is the IT department vocal? Do they take into account what they have to say? Do they have members that would go through that customer journey with the credit union and say, these are my pain points. You need to integrate the technology better to make my experience better. It's driven by the credit union itself. And then you need a champion internally to really say, we need to eliminate these pain points. That would be my opinion.
Yeah, so I'm trying to think of an example and I'm blanking right now, but I don't think the regulation and the compliance eliminates the opportunity for new technology, but it can hinder cost, time, things of that nature, because you have to think of the regulation and the corresponding compliance when you're building a lot of these channels. And don't get me wrong, all egg regulation and compliance isn't bad, but when it gets to the point where it's over the top, it can constrain.
Right.
Not necessarily eliminate the ability to build.
If you've got competing resources, unfortunately, you have to devote some of those resources against compliance. It's not something you just go, well, I'm not going to pay attention to that.
Yeah.
I'll just devote this towards developing this technology or finding the right partnership. That's where I think it really kind of comes down. It's overly burdensome regulation creating lots of FTE requirements that aren't necessarily driving member satisfaction.
Good question.
I forgot to ask you guys, state your name and your credit union. I apologize. So what's your name and your credit union, please.
Daniel Bradshaw. I'm the business development officer for Marion Community Credit Union in Marion, Ohio. My question was about financial education. We recently held a one-day, just kind of a lunch and learn type of thing with one of our partners on debt management. And it was a decent turnout, but from what I've heard, that's always a struggle. And financial education is, we all know, is very important. And I've seen a lot of work being done in the space to educate children, get them when they're young, try to build that in now. And we have so many parents, and I forget the statistics right off the top of my head, but I feel like 80, 90% of parents say, yes, teaching my kids about finances is important. But then you also see the statistics that say about 80 or maybe 75% of parents feel they are totally unqualified to be the one to teach them. Mm-hmm. So my question is, are you seeing anything, whether it's just in the regular kind of education space or maybe in the fintech space, where we're trying to qualify these parents, So it benefits them as individuals, benefits us as credit unions because they are our members, but then that they can go forward and educate the children.
Yeah, we just started working with, we've been doing education for a long time, and we do the children and we do adults. And we try to pick topics that resonate with people, and we do less of them because less sometimes becomes more. So we'll do a couple a year instead of a ton with the general membership, but we also do them with SEGS and all the different community groups that we work with. Sometimes going into the community to do the seminars is better than trying to bring them to the credit union because they think you're trying to sell them something. But we just added a digital component that has mobile quick videos that help people. So if you're sitting on the soccer field waiting for your kid, you can quickly watch kind of a video type of thing. But just constantly making it available is so important because you're right, there's a lot, they're not teaching it in the high schools. They're not, you know, your kids go off to college and they're trying to figure out how to do their first bank account on their own without their parents or whatever. But yeah, I would keep doing what you're doing and just find the topics that mean something to people and that you think you can get them in. And then there are a lot of off-the-shelf solutions out there that are not super expensive that you can utilize to help you and to supplement it from a video or digital space perspective.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with anything that you're talking about, which is training the trainer, so to speak, where you're training the parents to in turn then train their children. But there are a lot of resources. And like, for example, you know, Visa has got we have like Marvel comic books. So we have the Guardians of the Galaxy. We actually partnered with Marvel to put a financial education comic book together. It was like, you know, perfectly targeted for that, you know, middle school to high school age kid. So, you know, your partners may very well have a lot of those resources that you can white label and help. And you may be able to repurpose those in exactly the manner that you're talking about, which is, let's do this. Let's teach our parents so they can in turn teach their children. That's a great idea.
In Brazil, we have a member, and they're called Sicredi. Sicredi is one of the largest credit union groups in Brazil. Just a quick note about Sicredi, they actually are a national brand. There are about 150 credit unions that are individual credit unions with their own board of directors, and they have their own discretion in pricing, but they share the same brand. So when you go to these credit unions, it's a national, the perception is this is a national thing. And in terms of education, actually, they work with a lot of people who don't know how to write or read. And they bring them on Saturdays and Sundays after church or after soccer practice, whatever it is. And they work with the parents. So the parents start learning how to write and read. But as they go over the years, they include in that curriculum philosophy of credit unions and also financial management. So these people that live very far away from the city centers go into their communities and actually teach others. It's really interesting how they become financial advisors after 4 years of instruction. So it exists out there, and you know, this is a very different environment that you would see in Ohio. But the credit union is really making a difference there in educating people, in telling them what is the credit union difference, and then advancing their financial life and health. Which is interesting.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we have time for one more. Your name and credit union, please.
Michael Armstrong with Alcoa Community Federal Credit Union in Benton, Arkansas. And James told me I had the last question, so that's kind of cool. Having
right.
The last one, yeah.
we'll see.
I know our facilitator is going to have all the thank yous and acknowledgments for y'all coming, but thank y'all so much. From the 50 of us, thank y'all very much for coming and spending time with us.
Thank you.
Very much. I've got kind of a fun last question. I didn't want to, like, you know, throw anything too deep out there this early and before coffee, apparently. But this is kind of directed toward Victor. With a southern neighbor of ours that's kind of reawakening from a closed society to an open society, Cuba, the 50 of us here in the room are very passionate, very excited, and I know there's going to be a lot of efforts from the World Council going down there trying to help reestablish and reopen that. Not that y'all haven't done enough already, but I know that's coming soon. And you know, a crasher reunion in Havana sounds pretty nice. But what sort of things could we, in our immediate setting and maybe in the next year or two, get more involved? Because I think a lot of us kind of woke up and realized there's a World Council of Credit Union, you know, just, so what sort of things could we do to get more involved and kind of, since it is so close and it is coming around the bend, and I know it's a hot political topic as well, what sort of things could we do to get more involved with helping, you know, travel the world and, you know, help lead this passion that we've accumulated over this week?
Well, thank you very much, and I do appreciate the question so we can share what we can do. If you're in Arkansas, actually, you're part of the Cornerstone Credit Union League, so they do have a partnership with Brazil, and that's one easy way and quick way to get involved, and not only to teach and to learn, but mostly to learn from Brazil. This is one of the thriving places in credit union land. They're growing at 23% the membership every year, and in assets about 15 to 17%. So they're doing something right, and there's a lot to learn from them. We have the YCUP, which is the Young Credit Union Professionals Network, and then we work with James to make sure that you know about that opportunity. There is a scholarship for you if you ever go to one of our annual meetings. We have the International Partnership Program, as I said. In terms of, you know, we have a foundation. If there's any interest in you in teaching others in any part of the world, all you need to do is just send me your resume and say, hey, I am a branch manager, I'm whatever at the Credit Union, and I have this A, B, and C expertise. You know, these things come at random times. You know, I get calls from Kenya and say, hey, I need somebody that knows about social media. Could you find somebody that does that? Or, hey, we're trying to put together a risk management unit within my credit union, and this is in Argentina. Well, there it is. You know, if you have a foreign language capability, even better. Anyway, we have 80 countries that are members of World Council in all six continents. So there is an opportunity out there if you're passionate about credit unions for you to get involved. In terms of Cuba, I was there with our CEO and some leaders from the U.S. credit union system in 2015, and we went and had several meetings with the authorities in Cuba. And it was at the time that the Obama administration had just opened up, you know, all these talks and all this. So there's a lot of reticence and like kind of get to know face. It's like what we found when we went is like, you know, like the big cruise lines were there, the big hotel chains, and everybody was just knocking at the door at the government saying, we want this, we want this, we want this. And then when we got there, they thought that we were a big bank or, you know, whatever it was, and they were very, oh my gosh, what do these people want? So there's a little bit of that going on in Cuba right now, but at some point, I think in the next 2-3 years, you'll see a lot of engagement if things can continue the same. We don't know with the new administration what's gonna happen, but that's where our focus is. It's close, and there's a lot to do in that country. It's very interesting. But I appreciate your question. If you need, you know, we can connect offline.
Do we have time for anybody else to add anything, James? Or
if there's any final comments, please go ahead.
Yeah, guys, we have 2 minutes and 15 seconds left. Anybody have any final comments to
thank you for being a part of the process. Thanks for engaging with us. Thanks for letting us be here, and thanks for invigorating us.
Spread the word. You know, we talk a lot about credit union awareness and, you know, the good work that many are doing, including CUNA around that. We're just not a bragging group of people, right? And anything we can do to get our members to be raving fans for the credit union, that's going to be what will continue our tremendous growth. So credit union numbers are shrinking, members are growing. You know, just build raving fans. Keep doing what you're doing, and just make some incremental change. That's the big thing.
Yeah, you know, it's great on the incremental change piece, because like my personal experience is that last year at GAC, we had Crashers at our table for the Herb Wegner Award dinner. And just the excitement that came from that class of the Crashers and their, you know, their engagement got many of us at our company thinking more about how we can support the credit union movement in a bigger way, such that, you know, we ended up making, you know, additional investments. And it all really came from this group. I mean, the, you know, you and your colleagues. And so know that your excitement and your passion influences others. You know, and it brings others, whether it's new members, whether it's new employees to the credit unions, or even if it's other partners that can in turn work with you to continue to drive better member satisfaction and member, better member experiences.
What I can say is, you know, you're young and then you're full of passion, but be assertive. Your credit union needs to know that your voice needs to be heard. And if you can really make a difference, is also looking at your boards and see who is representing the credit union's membership. Is your board concentrated just in people who are 70 years old? Does your credit union have women in the board? Does your credit union have young people in the board? Your credit union is richer in the measure that they are represented by the many voices in that constituency. If you only have one kind of people representing you, then you're not doing it right. So be assertive, and then make sure that your credit union is well represented. And you know, when you're 20, when you're 30, those who are 50, 60 think, oh, I know more than you. That's usually what it is. So be assertive. That's I think what's going to push. And this is not a personal agenda. This is how the credit union itself can be better for their members.
Very cool. Very cool. Great message to end on. See the impact you guys can make. The impact. I mean, you guys are kind of the cream of the crop here, and you guys are really putting out a proactive effort to get up there and be heard. I mean, we've said it a million times here. Just get up there, be heard, have your message, be consistent. Above all, have fun and your energy. We love your energy. So go up there, be heard, be loud, and have a good time, all right? And before we go, I want to thank James, your fearless leader, for putting all this together as usual. So let's give him a big, big round of applause. And Andy Janney, who's been running around here taking pictures and stuff. What a great guy. So well done, Andy. And Matt Vance back there in the corner. Well done, Matt, as well. So you guys are led by some incredible people. So listen to them, soak it in, be sponges out there, and then go out there and just, again, be heard. Thank you guys again for your time, as usual.
Thank you.
Talk to these guys. Stay in touch with them. These guys have a ton of information and influence and all that great stuff. So stay in touch, all right? On that note, get up there and go make some noise. Hold on.